Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone. An experience I can unfortunately speak personally to, but I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply. What is up, Super Ninfriendos? It is a very special World Cup edition of Nintendo Voice Chat. This is episode 639. I am your host, Seth Macy, back again from the dead. It was a revival spell that they cast on me. Thank you, everyone else. I am joined today by football legend, Peer Schneider.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, thank you. Vielen Dank.
What team? What club did you play for, Peer?
Yes, wow. Longtime Germany player, national team.
A high-ranking FIFA official who is not corrupt, Cat Bailey.
Whoa. The rarest of beasts.
Yep.
And also rival to Peer Schneider today because we're rooting for opposite teams.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Ooh. Yeah. Though we'll know the results by the time this podcast actually goes up.
Yeah, this is pure torture for both of us to be on this show, Seth. I hope you can appreciate it. We would both be watching two competing matches. Kat wants Japan to win. I want Japan to lose, which my wife's not a big fan of. But obviously, we want Germany to go through, right? So,
yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
Well,
guess.
USA also, already went through. USA.
Yeah.
That would be more exciting if anybody other than like eight people in the USA actually were excited.
Boom.
I'm happy for those who are excited.
It's the fastest growing sport.
Netflix just needs to make a show over it, then it'll become popular.
That's
like
actually
Formula
not a bad
One.
Idea.
Yep.
I have to. This is the first time I've been on with Reb Valentine since Reb became the fourth Froggy Chair official.
I think we're actually just announcing that now.
Oh yeah, no. Reb is Reb's on the show now all the time. And Reb, what is your opinion on World Cup football?
The only sports my partner jokes that the only sports that I like are fake sports. So that's baseball. Wrestling, yeah. And video game speedrunning.
Whoa. Hold on a minute. Wrestling's fake. Okay, Reb.
Sorry, whatever. Sorry. I was joking.
Tell
it was a joke.
The Mick Foley's vertebrae when Undertaker chokeslammed him.
It's sports entertainment, I believe.
No, it is not. Do not spout that Chris Jericho nonsense in here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I touched a nerve. I didn't realize it.
Well,
wrestling is as real as anime and as beautiful.
Wow.
It is... That is wonderful way to describe it. But we are not here to describe wrestling. We're not here to talk about football, although I'm sure we will. What we are going to talk about is It's-a-Me Mario Movie Direct on Tuesday. Nintendo, or actually it was Monday night. Nintendo's like, by the way, also make sure to watch your onlines tomorrow because we're going to show you the next trailer for the Mario movie with a direct. It had Miyamoto-san. It had... And had Seth Rogen,
mm-hmm.
who we learned has a dog named Zelda. Which did you also know that Zelda Rogen has a dog named Seth?
What?
We are through the looking glass.
Wow, we have a lot of Seth news today.
Do you have a dog named Seth or Zelda?
My dog is named Seth Rogen.
Nice.
All right. No, I have to tell this Seth Rogen story. Seth Rogen's like wife. His family here in my town.
Mm-hmm.
And so a few years ago, he was coming, he was like in town and he was going to like all the little like roadside restaurants, you know, not the sit down ones, but like they serve hamburgers, hot dogs. And they take your name so they can call it so you can go up and get your food. And they're like, what's your name? And I said, Seth. And everybody in the kitchen like stuck their head out. And I was like, No.
You look alike. I mean,
I don't look anything like Seth Rogen.
No.
At all.
Only they had known that they were about to bask in the presence of the actual best Seth.
Thank you. I've been saying that for years. It's nice to hear it from someone else. Thank you, Reb.
But going back to the movie trailer, it was funny that we had an intro from Seth Rogen and then literally did not hear Donkey Kong speak.
like a sound, right? Like surely he did that.
Could have been anyone. No, I thought that was funny because when I saw the intro, I'm like, oh, we're going to hear what Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong sounds like. But we didn't even get a banana or anything.
No.
You know,
banana, the thing Donkey Kong says.
That's what he says. It's his most famous phrase.
Most famous phrase. We learned that Seth Rogen used to play PlayChoice 10, and he dreamed of being in a Super Mario movie ever since.
Yep.
His dream has come true.
Look, a lot of the actors I feel like have said that now, have said, my dream since I was this age was to be in a Mario movie.
Goombas.
Is that real?
Dude has a dog named Zelda. I think I'm going to buy it.
If his dream was to be in a Legend of Zelda game.
Well, no, because if you're Seth Rogen, you don't think you're going to be Link or Ganon. But like, if you think about Mario, there's so many characters Seth could be.
He could be Tingle.
Well, you could be Wario.
That would be very good,
He could
actually.
Be Tingle.
Hey, quick Seth fact. He's from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Okay. Thank you.
Just like Nardwar, my favorite music interviewer. So, we've got to see more of... the Mario movie, and I don't know about the rest of you because I haven't spoken or stuck my head up for air or anything. I'm kind of excited for this movie. Kat, you're famously an expressive and excited human being. I want to know, are you excited?
Is that what I
love your segues
like
today.
Shade at me.
Bear, you were born in British Columbia. What do you think about Seth Rogen? No, hey, go.
No, I want to hear Kat's opinion because I value it above many others. So.
Oh, thank you. I thought the trailer was lit. I thought it was a great trailer. It looks better every time. Chris, remarkably, Mario is definitely the worst part of the Mario movie so far. Chris Pratt is delivering a, how would you say, low energy performance as Mario. It's very strange. There's none of the joy most of the time, Mario seems kind of surprised that something bad is happening to him. I loved Peach. I thought Peach actually kind of stole the show, and I wish that she had introduced a trailer instead of Seth Rogen. I know that Donkey Kong was the first thing that you saw in it, but no, Peach. Peach was really good. I love all of the shout outs to Mario in general. You saw the Tanuki suit.
Yes.
The opening had a kind of Mario Odyssey, Donkey Kong feel to it, but also a Smash Brothers feel to it. Mm-hmm. Closing out on Mario Kart with the Rainbow Road, that ruled. Mm-hmm. You kind of get sort of the outlines of the story now. So it seems like Mario and Luigi are doing their thing. They're being plumbers in Brooklyn, and then they get separated. Mm-hmm. And Luigi's trying to find his way back to Mario is what I'm kind of gleaning from this trailer. Because in the end of the first trailer, you see him running away from the dry bones.
Right. And Bowser, meanwhile, is like rampaging through all these multiversal kingdoms. And Peach knows her kingdom's next. So she's trying to prep Mario to help her fight back.
And he knows that Mario is powerful, maybe like a chosen one or something. And so he somehow captures Luigi and is interrogating him about it.
Yeah. Just to bring balance.
I assume Mario already caused a lot of trouble that led up to that situation. I mean, I love the trailer. I thought it was just really playful, and it had so many references to the Mario and Donkey Kong franchises, characters hidden in the back. You know, the girder when Donkey Kong and Mario are facing off, it's Donkey Kong with a ladder hanging off the side. All of that is lovely, and it's not pandering. It doesn't like make the cameo so obvious. It just kind of like casually goes, okay, you now let into the Mushroom Kingdom. I thought it was really cool. I think, Luigi's performance is really fun. I love the self-referential thing that he says. Well, you know, I could just be anybody with a hat with my name, with the initial of my first name on it and a mustache. And all of that stuff was really lovely. I think you're right on Mario. We haven't seen enough, I think, of the performance to be sure what it's like. But it's like the first time he goes, let's go. It sounds like it's just a man delivering a Mario line. It's like, let's go, right? Like,
yes.
And then later it's like he goes full Martinet where he's like, and all of that stuff. So it's kind of odd in between. But I understand the challenge because, if he was just whooping and hollering like that and talking like that the whole movie, it'd probably get a little irritating. So We'll see. I'm keeping an open mind. I hope for the best. But so far, the supporting cast is really great. Anya Taylor-Joy is always awesome. So
Peach with fire flower rules.
Yeah. And then in her like suit, her like fighty suit with the spear. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. She's got the racing suit,
yeah,
right?
She like wears the Mario Kart suit. Yeah.
And then the other cool thing is you see the training course, which usually you've got the turning things with the fireballs, but in this case it's like balls, right? Yeah. And like it's like the training version of an actual Mushroom Kingdom horrible Bowser concocted obstacle course. I think it's so cool.
Yeah. I think I'm struggling a little with this sort of pitch of Mario being like kind of incompetent at everything.
And yes, it's not, I was going to bring that up.
It's not that I don't think that's like the correct premise for this movie, right? Because clearly the dude has not been Jumpman before and he's got to learn how to be Jumpman.
Yeah.
I think what's throwing me is the fact that he's like in the past, like in all of Mario, Mario is this competent, like everyman hero, jump man who can do everything. And then Luigi is this sort of like bumbling on the surface level, not really good at anything kind of guy, but is actually ends up being the more competent of the two once you get past that. And he's playing that so well in this trailer, like this kind of, I don't know what's going on. I'm very scared. Bowser's captured me or whatever. And he's, you know, he's going to get out of it somehow. But the fact that they're kind of both in that persona is sort of throwing me, I guess, and I don't think the Chris Pratt's voice acting is helping.
They clearly mean for this to be an origin story. By the way, they have a car.
Yeah,
the Mario brothers have a car.
Yeah, but I do. Oh, I love it though. It's really nice. I wish this trailer would have had more of Keegan-Michael Key's Toad because that is the funniest thing about this show to me.
They did a great job with the Toads.
Yeah. Oh, they're great. Yes.
They're having fun with the Koopa Troopas too, and everything. Ooh. So
I think this movie, the trailers that we've seen so far are proving that, like, look, this is a fundamentally stupid premise, right?
Yep.
Like Mario should not, the Mario games are not movie material in any way, shape, or form. You have to lean into how silly this is. And they're doing that, it seems like. They have nailed kind of that line of humor where kids can enjoy it, but also adults are like, ha ha, he got the cheap in the face.
Well, you know, like speaking for the dad contingent, just seeing Mario Kart represented in this is just so cool, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of us play that. That was, we all have such great kind of college memories of playing against our friends in battle mode. And it's just cool to have all that in here.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I think it'll be fun.
Yep. I like how faithful it feels to the games and how many direct gameplay elements they pull. Like the we were talking about at the very beginning when we were seeing the course that looks a lot like a Donkey Kong world.
Yep.
The poster shows Donkey Kong holding the barrel, seeing Mario standing on the dropping platforms and dodging around.
That was my favorite, that the dropping platform. Like we all, people who played Mario will go like, no, that platform's going to drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, right? And it's wonderful to see that acknowledgement.
And very specific reference to galaxies. Lots of galaxies out there.
Yes. Wink, I bet we get like a tease of Rosalina at the end of this or something.
She's gonna, she's gonna be in the stinger.
Yeah. That's the post-credit sequence.
Oh yeah,
exactly.
100%.
Is it Wario or Rosalina?
It's got to be Rosalina.
I think Wario and Waluigi might like show up for a cameo in this movie. I wouldn't be surprised.
Or they might just announce Super Mario Galaxy 3 at the end.
Well, and the reason why I actually think that. Sorry, go ahead, Seth.
Well, no, I was going to say, one of the question block questions actually was from Jared Hankins asking, do you think Nintendo is working on a new, well, yeah, we think they're working on a new Mario game or a collection to release alongside with.
100%. We're due for a new Mario game. Like, it's time.
It's like in movies like The Dark Crystal, where like all the planets align and everything. They got a park opening and a movie coming out. And both are based on a video game franchise. What's missing? There's got to be some sort of celebration then. Something that we're going to have to spend our money on.
I was going to say, I think that we'll see Wario and Waluigi in this, specifically because Luigi has that goofy line where he's like, I don't know everybody who has a hat with their letter, the first initial of their name on it or whatever. And no, he doesn't, because he doesn't know Wario and Waluigi.
Look at this, Cranky. Cranky Kong. There's so many characters in the background.
Yeah, Funky, I think
Funky,
is in
sorry.
No, 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 that's Cranky. But
this is Cranky, but Funky
is
Kong
in the
is in the
Mario
back.
Scene.
That's right.
Oh, really? I haven't done the trailer breakdown. I'm kind of blown away by how I was not expecting it to look this good. Like, it just looks so polished and so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like every scene is just filled. Well, I mean, and obviously it's a trailer. It's designed to excite the senses. But like, every scene is just so full of things and not in a crowded way either. It just looks so good. Oh my God, I'm so excited. What do we think? What do we think box office? We thinking number one movie of 2023?
Oh, I don't know.
This is going to beat Avatar 2.
2023.
We'll see what comes out. There's a company called, I think Marvel, something like that. They make
Marvel's
movies.
Over. Kids don't care about Marvel anymore. That stuff is so boring.
How much money did Wakanda Forever make already?
I think
it's a good bet that this is going to be an absolutely ginormous opening worldwide. I mean, the numbers in Japan are going to be nuts, too.
It's going to break $1 billion.
Absolutely.
I think this is going to be $1 billion franchise, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That means we're going to get more Nintendo
I hope so.
Movies.
Yep.
Assuming, I mean, it looks like it's going to be really good. If it's as good as it looks, I hope so.
They'll have the inevitable sequel hook. And then they'll go into Dream World for some reason, and Wart will be there.
The Mario
vegetables. People will be very confused.
I hope they don't blow all their powder on this movie, because we already see some glimpses of Luigi's mansion and stuff. I'm like, do the ghost house story.
Yeah.
Do the ghost house story.
Luigi's poster
separately.
Has him doing like the flashlight on his face, like he does on the Luigi's mansion cover. It's really
35
good.
35 years of Mario material to pull from.
That's
just think of all the sports games. We could have a whole movie of Mario playing tennis.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that'd be so exciting. Airship Mario Party. Everybody's invited
Mario
to a Mario
Strikers.
Party.
Finally. Mm-hmm. That's what we've all been hoping.
Picross, they'll be playing Picross all
game. Being a referee in Punch-Out.
Yep, there you go.
It's like a Rocky-style supercut of him doing all the sports.
That'd be great.
I kind of would not be surprised. I'm very excited. This trailer was really good. There was nothing about it that gave me any concern, other than, like, Reb, you talked about, where Mario's maybe a little too bumbling. A little too inept, but like you said,
I don't mind. It's a hero's journey. He's gonna get better. It's fine.
It's funny. I'm already. Are you getting used to the changed looks of the characters already too? Because at first, when we saw Mario, I was like, what's different? Like so little has changed, but he looks off. And like, I'm wondering if we felt the same way when we saw the 3D renders for Smash Brothers for the first time or something, right? But it's like, now I'm already used to what he looks like, and Donkey Kong looks just fine to me.
Yeah, I like the new Donkey Kong look. And Miyamoto actually talked about changing the design for this one. So like, it's time to update the design. I think it works really well. Like, I like the emphasis on the fur.
Yeah, no, looks like Mario. Looks like Donkey Kong. That's what they look like.
What more could you ask for? They look like who they're supposed to look like. That's like the very base thing that you need.
Well,
for
the original Mario movie couldn't pull that off. So
that is
sorry, Bob Hoskins.
Or I can't remember anybody else in that movie.
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo. Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper.
That movie confused the heck out of me originally. Because I saw the trailer. I'm like, why does Koopa look like that? What is going on?
Our social team did like a comparison cut between that movie and this one, like using similar scenes side by side. It's on our YouTube channel too, if you go to the short section. And it's so funny, like the stuff that happens in it. I'm like, wait, when do they drive in a car in like a Cadillac through a window and they fall down and they're being suspended by goop? And I'm like, I don't remember what happens in this movie, but nothing makes sense when you see it like that.
It's a very boring movie too.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's the only time that the Super Scope 6 has ever been in a movie as well. Mm. Little piece of trivia. I don't know if that's true.
Fun fact.
But I'm pretty sure that's true.
Important to know. Thank you.
Yeah, you'll remember next bar trivia night. That's going to take you to and your team to the championships. So little Nintendo trivia. All right. Well, Super Mario movie looks amazing. I don't think there'll be any performance issues. Guess what? Hey, Reb, you were right about Pokemon. And anyone who's surprised hasn't been paying attention.
I know.
Didn't play the game. It runs really really badly. If you go on the internet for 3 seconds, you'll see at least 10 glitch videos that are all like really hilarious and weird. You said it performed badly and people got really mad at you because they've wrapped up their identity in what they enjoy. And so when you attack what they enjoy, you're attacking the identity. And I think we need to unravel from that a little bit as a society. And yet it's the fastest selling Pokemon ever. 10 million copies sold within the first few days.
I mean, the pre-orders on this were nuts. Like people, like before people had even gotten their hands on it. So it's the Pokemon name alone is doing this.
You
work.
Say open world,
open
Pokemon.
World Pokemon. Yeah, you're not.
And the trailers look great.
I want to be clear. Like I'm having a lot of fun with it, but I may also have a high tolerance for glitches. Right? There are games that I played in the past where, like, I couldn't finish a mission because the game was broken. I was like, I was annoyed, but I kept playing. But there's some people who don't have that sort of tolerance. And then at the same time, you also got to ask the question: like, this is a ginormous franchise, right? And there's a lot of there's a lot of expectation, and there's kind of winning audience trust that when you get a Pokemon game, you're not getting a dinky little game that was slapped together by a tiny team in a garage. This is one of the biggest franchises in gaming history, and you kind of I like that you know held their feet to the fire there a bit and said it really shouldn't be that way. And I think you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also want to sort of point out, and this is in my review as well, which people should actually read the whole thing if they haven't yet. Final scored review is now on IGN.com. But it definitely seems like people's mileage is kind of varying on this. So there's some people who are saying, I mean, some people who are maybe deluding themselves a little bit, but who are mostly going out there and saying, there's like some frame rate issues, but other than that, I haven't experienced any problems. And great for them. And there's other people who have, I have friends, like close friends who I play this online with, who have told me that they've experienced like tons of hard crashes. And I've kind of, my experience was sort of in the middle of those two things. Like I haven't had any hard crashes. A couple of our guides writers did, but I have had like significant, like parts where the game will just froze for several seconds, wild frame rate, wild lighting problems. It's all in the review. You can read about it. So I've kind of like been in the middle of that. And then one of the things that we did was like, I held the review until a few days after launch because I didn't have the opportunity to test the online components. And honestly, the online components make everything worse. Again, watch the video review. There's some wild stuff in there. My friend turned into a giant stretchy noodle boy. At one point, he was doing a weird YMCA.
Oh, I love
doorway.
That video.
There's a bunch of stuff like that. And then I've been doing, since the review came out, I've been doing tons and tons of Terra raid battles. And those are a disaster. Oh my gosh. It is like basically impossible to play the primary piece of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet endgame content right now because of the sheer amount of lag, the weird timer structure. There's an article on this specifically on IGN.com explaining why it's so messy. But the online just adds this whole new level of problem to it that most people don't like notice until they reach the end game and are actively doing high level things online. So hopefully the patch helps.
They didn't push the co-op that hard like leading up to launch anymore, and that's probably why, right?
Oh,
because they knew there were going to be issues, because like for me as someone who started with the first Pokemon games, I always dreamt of it being a communal experience, right? Like being able to work together in the realm. To be fair, I also thought that about the Elder Scrolls game, and then what we got with Elder Scrolls Online was very, very different from, you know, the kind of Morrowind and Skyrim I loved, and same with Fallout.
It's not really communal, is it? Like you're kind of existing in the same world, doing your own things.
Yeah, the co-op feels like weirdly unfinished. Like if you put...
You mean like the rest of this game?
Sure. Ooh. If you put the bugs and the frame rate, all the technical stuff aside, the co-op is very weird. So I put in, my three friends put in a code, we go online, we're all in the same world together. We can all basically by ourselves do all the same things for the most part. There's a couple things that are gated off that we can do in the game by ourselves. So we can all spread out, go anywhere in the world we want, catch Pokemon, battle trainers, all this other stuff. Except for like one feature, none of it is cooperative. So like we can't do double battles. We can't battle trainers together. Like story content we can't do together, which I kind of understand. Like my friend hadn't done the first Titan fight, and so I watched them run up to the Titan fight and just vanish. And then but they were able to do it while online in my game.
Okay.
But like, you know, it was kind of meaningless that they could. It was just sort of there.
This year I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it, and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And then there's like this weird thing where if my friend is battling a wild Pokemon, I can see them send out their Pokemon. I can see the wild Pokemon. I can kind of watch them attacking each other, and I can watch them Terra evolve, Terastalize or whatever. And I can watch their battle happen. I can also run through their battle, and they can see me running around and making faces in their battle, which is pretty funny. But the other thing is they can battle trainers, but if you battle a trainer, you can't see what's going on. So it just looks like your friend is standing there in like a fighting pose, and then there's just this trainer that's standing there completely still staring at a wall, and there's a blank space between them. And it's very weird. I'm like, it feels very unfinished. The only thing that you can actually do cooperatively, and I'm like, I don't think I'm forgetting anything. I think the only cooperative thing you can really do when you're playing like that is making sandwiches together, which is extremely funny. When you have a bunch of like dumb, goofy friends who just like to mess things up on purpose, you can make some very interesting and fun sandwiches that way, and you can get like extra powers and stuff for that.
That sounds like a you problem, though.
Oh, no, it was great. We made like my friends like bought a bunch of burger patties, and they just stacked like a single stack of burger patties, and then we tried to put the bun on top, and the whole thing fell over. It was really fun. Like, I enjoyed that part.
Welcome to the sandwich meta of Pokemon.
Yeah. Oh, you can do, wait, sorry, you can do Terra battles together. I don't know why I forgot about that. Actually, doing four player co-op when you're all in the same world together doing a Terra battle, it runs marginally better.
You could do that in Sword and Shield as well, more or less.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that great. And right. Actually, I think back to Dragon Quest IX, which I think did an incredible job with local co-op. Yeah. And you could play through the story together. You could do battles together. You could swap treasure maps and basically go on randomized raids. You could pass by people with the Street Pass functionality and have them populate your tavern.
Oh, Street Pass.
And I miss that, actually, because I think Dragon Quest IX had a real intentionality behind it and polish with its co-op. And yes, I know it wasn't an open world game. It was a top-down 2D game. The DS isn't as hard to program for, etc. But I'm really bummed out by Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Like, we were talking about high tolerance for glitches. I was impressed by the opening. I thought that the opening was really strong.
See, it's a great little
I loved
here.
Watching my three starters running around on the path, heading to the school and everything. And then it just got progressively worse. I can't deal with how plain the overworld is. Nothing has any character. I have a friend who worked on like Elder Scrolls Online. It's like a programmer and open world stuff. And she was just losing her mind over this stuff. She was saying, this is like baby's first open world stuff right here. I can't.
Oh, man.
She's like, I can't believe this.
It is.
She called it amateurish.
Well, here's my question. Do we think that this game was put out early to hit the holiday season?
Oh, 100%.
So I have a theory. On this. Here's my theory. They started spinning this up right before the pandemic after Sword and Shield, and they had big ideas, and they were laying the groundwork for it during Sword and Shield. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic, as it just derails everything. And I think it had a big impact on Japan. And I think that's why Legends Arceus and Scarlet and Violet are noticeably worse than even than what we've kind of come to expect. And Pokemon was already struggling a bit with the tech pipeline. I think they fell behind schedule, but you know, with this kind of thing, with this kind of merchandising machine,
you can't
just pump the brakes. And so they were on a schedule and they had to get this game out, and they bit off more than they could chew ultimately in terms of pandemic conditions.
I mean, Sonic went through similar things, right? Like, when you play the Sonic game, you've got that's a game where you run super fast and you've got popping in front of you and you hit a wall, right? Which is like much more gameplay destroying than some of the things you encounter here. Like, I think there's some developers that have not worked on open world games, and making open world games, to be fair, is really hard.
It is.
Because you need to bake in so much more QA time to make sure that people cannot break the world, right?
Right there in the name.
Yeah. It's like in a side scroller with levels, like, okay, if there's an exploit where you can break that level, you move on to the next level and it's forgotten. And here you're in a world and you revisit areas and people can get stuck in between the geometry and
it's so ugly.
It is not the prettiest.
It made me really miss Pokemon Sun and Moon, which was really polished, really beautiful. It had some great art design to it. It was pre-Dexit, great starters, really strong story, actually. Ultrasun and Ultramoon had blue and red on their honeymoon. It was very cute. And I think back to that experience and compare and contrast it with this, and this just feels so ramshackle by comparison.
I think the good news is, you know, I think definitely the user feedback and reviews such as yours, Reb, rattled Nintendo a little bit, because they are not usually this vocal on like, hey, we're gonna fix it. Oh,
yeah,
we hear you, right? They usually go like, you know, Joy-Con drift, what are you talking about, right? And
they publish a patch and the only note says various improvements and fixes to the gameplay experience, and that's literally it.
Yeah, but it's
look
a big
how much
patch,
better this
right?
looks than freaking Scarlet and Violet, a 3DS game. Yep. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it was pre-Dexit. Ugh.
Their designers are so good. Like, they understand, like, their monster design, their world design, like, they, and you can see it in bits in Scarlet and Violet. Like, you go into some of the towns, and the textures and the overall vibe is, like, ugly as sin, but, like, you look around and you see, like, the different buildings in each town, and each town has its own personality and flavor, and then you can't go in any of the buildings, and everything is just like off and running like crap. So, you know, like somebody had an idea for these towns, like to make them each unique.
No character customization.
Based on different versions of Spain. Yeah, things like that. But they didn't have the time or the resources. Like something failed somewhere.
Well,
and I just, I want them to have, like, we've been begging for this for a while, but I think it's showing more than ever with Scarlet and Violet. Like, I'm having so much fun with this. It's there, like, in the core underneath. But then every, like, 5 minutes or so, something breaks or something looks ugly, and I'm just pulled right out of how much fun I'm having.
I think there are three factors. One, you know, the team's not experienced with this, and it is not a team of technologists, right? Like, this is not a team known for high-performance visuals. Two, QA time obviously was way too short, and, like, you know, the time period. But it's like, I keep thinking back to what happened to Earthbound 64, which was an incredibly creative designer and wonderful ideas. And then when we saw the first footage of the game running, we're like, ooh, oh my God, what's going on here, right? Like, they were clearly battling the system. And I think that's the third point here, is the Nintendo Switch just can't keep up with the aspirations and the ideas and the... Reds, you're so freaking fast. There's now Earthbound 64 footage here.
Wow.
But it's like... The Switch is just getting too old.
I don't think this is a Switch problem. Yeah. Oh, I really is. Don't. This have you really seen Xenoblade 3? Like, look, I know that I'm the first person on this podcast to go,
very good point.
When people start talking about Xenoblade. What?
Yeah, no, I was saying Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Yeah. That's,
oh, yeah. Like, I push whenever you all talk about Xenoblade 3, but, like, my partner's been playing it lately, and I've got Pokemon on my screen, and he's got Xenoblade 3 on his TV right next to me, and I'm looking over there, and I'm like, dang,
no,
I could be
looks...
playing that right now. That runs real good.
No,
it's pretty.
Obviously, this is not the first time that they've done a game with a world of this sort of scope, and, you know, like, that's a more experienced developer, but it's still pretty blurry at times, and you wish this was even running on a PS4 Pro or something, you know?
You're right, and you're right.
Yeah.
But the problem with Pokemon is just the utter lack of polish, the utter lack of art direction, the absurd glitches, the slowdown. It feels like there's, like, memory leaks going on. This is just a bad game by any measure. And I think that when you look at how Game Freak is operating, yes, I'm willing to make allowances for the pandemic, which I think, again, we just are constantly underestimating the impact of how much that hurt game development over the past 3 years. But I think also, if Game Freak wants to be an annualized game developer that is putting out these very ambitious games on a pretty tight schedule, they got to get with the times. They have to get a lot bigger. They have to have a lot more studios that they're working with. And they've been kind of slowly moving up. Actually, Sarah B has a really interesting, like, flow chart of all of the different, like, entities that are working alongside Game Freak and the Pokemon Company and everything. But I really think they're taking on too much for what they're actually capable of. And they need, God help me, they need to take a look at what companies like Ubisoft are doing, where they have, like, 10 freaking studios working together in tandem to make these games. That's kind of what you need to do in the modern game development environment.
Yep. And
I think you kind of answered the question I was going to ask the panel, is what do we think that this means for the future of Pokemon? Like, is this going to hurt Pokemon long term? Reb, what was your final score for everybody at home?
I gave it a 6, which on the IGN
scale is
okay.
It's okay, and that's probably the lowest scoring mainline Pokemon game ever, right?
That we've given, probably? I don't know. I haven't looked at our score history.
Pikachu deserves a lower score.
It's not a mainline Pokemon game, though. I was not referencing the scores of all Pokemon games past to decide how I felt about something.
There are too many of them.
It is definitely the worst mainline Pokemon I've ever played.
Yeah. But the thing is, it could be good. Like, you can see. But you see, like, the fundamentals of playing it, like how fun it can be.
It's a very rough sketch.
It is. But that's why I keep opening it. I keep playing it. And I guess I just want to, like, keep emphasizing that because a lot of people are having fun with it. You're super valid. Like, I'm having fun, too. And I'm also cringing every 5 seconds.
I'm having fun and I'm annoyed at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm having fun and I'm annoyed. That's pretty... Pretty good summation of it.
Every IGN Pokemon.
So in terms of the future, I think on the one hand, Pokemon is bigger than just the games. And you can just see that in going to the Pokemon Center and seeing that games are one aspect of it and not even a very big aspect of it. The characters and the creatures and everything, especially in Japan, are just omnipresent.
Yeah.
And... Mm. One way or another, people have a real appetite for a high-quality experience for this. If they come back and that the next generation of Pokemon is like a much more polished-looking thing, people will be excited.
Yep.
Full stop. Yep. And there's so much nostalgia, I mean, across years. It's interesting. On Twitter, there was a conversation about whatever happened to Final Fantasy. And Final Fantasy, I would argue, is the chain was broken because they didn't put out a good game for like more than a decade.
Yeah.
And so there's an entire generation who grew up not knowing what a good Final Fantasy looked like. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah. With apologies to Final Fantasy 13 apologists. Whereas, you know, Pokemon, that's 25 years of like sustained nostalgia out there.
But incremental development, right? Like the Pokemon games for a long time just kind of added more Pokemon and some smaller systems, but visually treaded water.
It's interesting because we were talking about Pokemon X and Y, which is having a moment, I think, because a new generation who grew up with X and Y, they're coming up now. And that was a huge change for the series. And looking back, it was fairly rough, especially like you saw a slowdown when you tried to play in 3D, when you had multiple Pokemon. But it was nothing on this scale. No. Like the transition to 3D was not easy for the series, but it didn't lose as much also.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I want to believe this is going to be a bit of a wake-up call. I mean, obviously, Pokemon doesn't need good review scores. It could freely ignore all the people complaining right now and probably still sell piles of copies if they came out with another one next year. I'm sure the pre-orders would be through the roof.
I mean, Legends Arceus was popular.
It was.
And successful.
I want to think that this is embarrassing, right? Like, this is a really embarrassing release, I think, for the people involved. I think, like, Nintendo doesn't release games, like, normally that run like this.
So they put out two Pokemon games in 1 year.
They did. And I'm hoping...
technically three, because BDSP came out right around this time, too.
Yeah, different studio, though, so...
But they farmed it out. But then they had to come back and basically work on it as an emergency thing because it was going really poorly with the Unity engine. I don't know if I'm breaking news here, but...
I didn't know that.
This is the rumor that's been around.
I see. Yeah. But
I think they're going to... I think they're going to spend a lot of effort to try and fix.
I think so too.
It feels a little bit like a No Man's Sky situation where we were excited at the premise of something, and then we get something, we're like, this is all, okay, what's going on? Oh, you guys need to fix this. And, you know, to No Man's Sky's developers' credit, they worked really hard on fixing that and changing minds.
Yeah, that's great.
Hopefully we'll see this again here.
I hope that they're having some serious discussions behind the scene about how they adjust their pipeline so that something on this level doesn't happen again.
Or if there is something Nintendo can do on the technology front to assist Game Freak to pull this stuff off. Because remember, when Breath of the Wild came out, we were all like, oh my God, what if they made Pokemon using this engine?
Yeah.
And, you know, that engine was not designed for a game with lots of little Pokemon hopping around.
Zillions of people were like, but what if Pokemon and Unreal Engine? Look how amazing it would be.
As we're talking about this, there is a patch that's out as we're recording this. That is supposed
to... You probably already downloaded it.
Fix things. I did try to play this morning and the patch wasn't out yet, so I have no idea. But maybe next week we can talk about that.
Yeah, let's see. Maybe,
see if it helps.
Maybe it's already all fixed within just a week.
Everything's bad.
No.
Do we think it's bad enough that we'll get an apology video?
Oh, no.
No.
No, they won't apologize for anything.
They did. I mean, they tweeted, we're sorry, this is not the
we're taking this very seriously, blah, blah, blah. Is what they said. Yeah. And that's about as close as you're going to get.
I think they'll acknowledge that they went a little too early with this thing.
A lot of comparisons too close to the original Cyberpunk release. Mm-hmm. And I think they're apt.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Well, we've been talking about a Pokemon and all of its problems and how you might not really be bothered by them if you're a certain kind of person, which brings me to our next topic. And this topic is a direct quote from our Slack conversation from Reb when I asked if about Pokemon. The quote is, "You'll love it, very fun, runs like ass." So my question to the panel is, what games do you love that are very fun that run like ass? Kat, you had one in the Slack channel, and I definitely agree with it.
What did I throw out there? Please remind me.
You said Skyrim.
Oh, yeah, Skyrim. Same. Oh, my gosh. Bethesda games in general. I reviewed Fallout 4, and that game had so many absurd glitches to it, but they weren't game-breaking to me. I also called Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines one of the 25 best games ever, best RPGs, I should say. And that game requires a giant fan patch just to work properly, basically. So, yeah, there are a lot of, especially in the RPG space, which tends to be a very ambitious genre. They have a lot of complicated interconnecting systems. They're open world. They want to have you be able to go along different pathways. Takes a lot of development time. And then they're on a schedule, so it's hard to polish them up. But we love RPGs because despite their lack of polish, they have big ideas and big ambitions. And we're seeing that a little bit with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which is why I think at least a handful, a contingent, are willing to cut it some slack because they're like, I like the vision. The execution, but I like the vision. And I mean, isn't that Bethesda in a nutshell? I like the vision. I like the the scope, the freedom, the ideas behind it, even if it's even if I'm like periodically getting launched into the sky good reason.
Well, that was a feature. That was fun when the horses just go up into the sky. But I felt the same way with Skyrim, and I was actually a little bit confused around the negative discourse. There were a lot of users, and maybe there were people who didn't actually play the game, and it was some console war BS. But they were like, well, how can you give this game a high rating? It's so glitchy. And it's like, well, one, it does things no other game does. Red, thanks for showing the game locking up on the screen right now and like going completely nuts. But like, you walk into towns and there are people going about their business. And this was really new at the time when you know, the Elder Scrolls games started to develop more and more and more. It felt like there were characters reacting to you, and if you were behaving poorly, they would freak out and run away. Or you could, there's a shopkeeper selling you stuff and you kill him. And, like, no other game ever did that because, like, no, you can't get rid of the shopkeeper. Then you can't buy the stuff they have. And, like, yet they were this ambitious and did this many things. And so as a player, I was just okay with things once in a while being weird and, like, a Draugr getting stuck in a wall or, like, a hand sticking out when somebody's behind the door. I kind of accepted it. But there were moments where I was like, F this game. Like, there was a quest where you had to collect these little crystals, like tears, whatever, and the crystals, like, the thing shattered and one of the tears fell under a rock. And I'm like, I can see it, but I can't pick it up. And like, there was no way for me to finish this because the game saves and it saves the location of everything.
Yeah.
And so for the longest time, I could not finish this crucial quest until they patched it. And like, at that point, I was getting really miffed. But I think in general, I think Nintendo is really good usually at having, you know, good quality control, making sure their games work, don't glitch too much, you know. It's still amazing when you go back to games like Mario 64. Speedrunners can exploit them, but as a player, it's really well put together and really well QA'd. But there was a phase when Rare was making games. Like, you probably forgot how badly Perfect Dark ran. Like, really badly. If you are blowing up a lot of mines, you're getting 3 frames per second, right? Like, there are moments in multiplayer where it's like, it's just not playable. And a lot of games at the time were starting to get letterboxed. Look at Pilotwings 64, runs in letterbox too. Jet Force Gemini, I thought, had like the roughest spots of not running nicely. And then when Ocarina of Time came out, we did not get 30 or 60 frames per second, right? We got something like 24 going down to 20. So Nintendo struggled with it in the past, especially on the N64. We just got used to it.
The original Pokemon was also quite unpolished. I mean, so many glitches. Missing Nose, like one of the Missing most famous of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that straight up did not work properly in that game.
But it's making video games is hard, right?
It
and
is.
Like testing, the funny thing about bug testing and finding bugs is like you fix one bug, you may make another one, right? Like you break something else. And it's like, I never want to, you know, talk down on the efforts of developers because like it's so much work. And the bigger the world and the more freedom you have, the tougher it is to make sure that it always works okay.
And the fascinating thing is how the community, as we were kind of alluding to, can turn the bugs into a feature.
Mm-hmm.
Speedrunning is maybe the most obvious one.
Yeah.
Smash Brothers, where they were able to use kind of weird glitches with the animation system to be able to basically invent a new game mechanic from a whole cloth.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, in Pokemon games, they say it's not a bug type, it's a feature type. So, Reb, what about you? What game runs terribly, but you just love it anyway?
I actually misunderstood your prompt when I filled out this option on the sheet. I didn't realize we were talking about performance specifically.
Not specifically. Just a game that's like kind of like booty and you just love it.
I'm the kind of games I play tend to be smaller in scope. I don't play a lot of games. I mean, I love Skyrim, but I don't play games on that like level where there's just things breaking all the time. Your prompt made me think about Donkey Kong 64. Because that is a game that I love dearly with all my heart, but
yes.
I also recognize it's kind of bad.
Yep.
The whole notion of having five Kongs is really cool and being able to switch between them, but then there's like a trail of blue bananas and then purple coins and then a yellow banana balloon and then a switch that only Chunky can activate, and like that design is infuriating. Things like the movement controls underwater, I mean, I know it was still on the N64 and we were still kind of figuring
out
how to do that stuff.
It's replayability.
But yeah, that game is real messy and like frustrating at times in the ways in which it is designed, but it's really fun.
Can you
really
do the entire Donkey Kong rap?
What?
Can you do the entire rap?
I can. Do you want me to?
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm not.
Social breakout.
There you go.
Absolutely not. I probably can. I would have to think it through.
But what?
What the verses?
Donkey Kong.
I might lose you towards the end when we get to Chunky because I don't think I listened to it through.
What I find interesting about Donkey Kong 64, it's like a missing link in game design in that it wanted to give you incentive to go back into levels and do something.
Yeah.
Over, like explore the same area but have a different experience. The problem was it did so with like the worst bout of collectoritis any game ever caught, right? It's like you're walking around and you only see things that you can't do, which I think over time games have gotten more sophisticated. You see a hookshot target and you're like, oh, maybe that's something I come back to, or you know, in or Mario and Rabbids, you see a certain like a bridge you can't build yet. Like that sort of design has gotten just better and better, but like Donkey Kong 64 like almost like did this excessive solution to trying to do this, and like it didn't work for me. It really annoyed me. It needed
to come out years later and have a Genshin Impact style of character switching where you just have one button and you just switch between the Kongs.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
If they'd made it 20 years later, it might have been good.
Donkey Kong 64 remake, let's go.
I'm into it. As someone who has played Donkey Kong 64 as recently as a week ago.
It's literally on the TV behind you. I see you.
It's on the TV behind me. That is right.
I know those trees.
It is both better and not as bad as you remember. I was kind of surprised. It's still quite playable, although all my Nintendo 64 controllers are in desperate need. But
Cat, no new golds.
Oh,
I think that's my game too. So.
I heard that DK rap so many times playing Smash Brothers Melee.
It doesn't have all the verses in it, though.
No, it's true.
It's just a couple. Yeah.
The first member of the DK crew. I was like, I know that one.
It
also requires the expansion pack for the N64, which I forgot about when I bought my copy of it. Thankfully, I had one.
Donkey Kong 64 is my white whale, actually. I've never finished it. I may have told the story in this podcast before. My next door neighbor had it. I didn't have an N64 growing up. My next door neighbor did, and he had Donkey Kong 64. And so every weekend I would go over and we would play together and we would pass the controller. And we were like young, and it was before like we weren't on the internet. So we, you know, weren't good at this game. And it took us a very long time to get through it. And we finally got to the final boss battle, and we had, you know, gone through it a few times, and we had gotten towards like the, we got like to the last Kong on the boss battle with K. Rool. And then he moved away.
I never
finished Donkey Kong 64. I wish I had.
Your expansion?
I wonder what happens. I wonder how it ends.
He gets a banana.
I think it's going to come to Nintendo Switch Online expansion.
It will.
I just feel it in my bones.
If it does, I know I'm cynical on this podcast about no one actually uses Nintendo Switch Online to replay these games longer than it takes to tweet about them.
I replayed Banjo-Kazooie.
The whole way through?
I'm on the last level now.
Okay, all right.
Wow.
I'll eat crow on that. That's
I'll finish
good.
It in 5 years.
If Donkey Kong 64 comes to Switch Online, I might actually make a point to play through that entire game. And
awesome. You know what, Reb? Let's make it a thing where you and I play through it.
All right,
we'll,
deal.
Like, discuss it. And all right.
I'd love that. Yeah.
All right, have fun.
Nintendo.
Fun collecting.
Stuff together. I love, you know, who doesn't love a blue banana? That's how you know it's fresh.
What's it that Donkey Kong says again? Banana, banana, banana.
Banana. His famous catchphrase.
Banana, banana.
Get Seth Rogen to say that.
Good cameo. Oh
my God. Let's do it. All right. It's time to talk about the Miiverse. The Miiverse is, of course, the part of the show where we just like talk about what we've been playing, or like, I don't know, what's the score between in the Japan game right now?
What's
the
score
Cup?
Pair?
It's just Japan is trailing by one, Germany is leading by one. Two different games.
Okay.
Pear is going to be happy and I'm going to be sad.
It's fine, but you can be happy over my happiness.
No.
I'll be sad.
That's I want you to suffer.
That's the best way. Rib, have you been...
Sorry.
You been playing anything lately? Anything new? Anything new going on? Other than I love your new frames, by the way.
Oh my God, you noticed. Thank you.
Wow, Seth.
Cool. Yeah, that was really sweet. So after a very long and grueling time with Pokemon, I finally was able to escape from Pokemon. I went back to a game that I actually played last year called Toem. I talked about it on this podcast last year. I believe I reviewed it for us. I can't remember what I scored it, but I'm pretty sure it was high because I really liked it. And as a reminder, Toem is a little game by a studio called Something We Made. You play as this little dude, black and white world, very Captain Toad style worlds. They're like little dioramas that you can rotate around, and you go off.
Ooh,
on
I love this.
You go off on a journey to take photos. It's a photography game. You have your little camera, and the camera is not just for taking photos. It's the primary way that you interact with the world, and you proceed through these little worlds, all these different little towns, by completing tasks, assignments that are given to you. Take photos of these things. I'm looking for this guy. Where is he? Yeah, that's the guy. I'm looking for this guy. Where is he? And then occasionally do it, like you have a little horn on your camera that you can honk to like startle people and interact with things. There's like a tripod that you can use. There's a few little like gimmicks around the camera, but it's mostly around taking pictures and sort of running errands. It's very sweet, wonderful soundtrack, adorable, humorous writing, lovely, bite-sized, short, like weekend finish this game kind of thing. Anyway, so they released an update, a free DLC. They released it like a month or two ago. It was a little bit, but it took longer to come to the Switch, and I have no idea when it was out, but it's out now. It's free DLC, and they added the island of Basto, which is a brand new area. And in Basto, it's very similar concept. You go to Basto, they give you a water balloon attachment for your camera, so you can throw water balloons at people and get, you know, different reactions out of them, or you can interact with the world. Like there's a quest there to like water all these plants, and you throw water balloons at them. You have to find them in the world to water them. And it's very much a game about being observant, like, you know, using your camera angles, like look at the world around you and figure out like, how do I interact with this thing? How do I find this thing that might be hidden around the corner? And aside from the water balloons, Basto also is the only place to have a day-night cycle. It's an island, so there's tides. So at night, the tides are lower and you can access areas that you can't otherwise access. But during the day, the water's up, so the bridges are up and you can cross those. It's really sweet. It's very bite-sized. I finished it in like a couple hours. It was free. It was a very sweet update, and it brought me back to a game that I really loved. And I really enjoyed that time with it. So Tome's great. If you haven't played Toem, you should play it.
And that's spelled T-O-E-M.
T-O-E-M.
T-O-M-E. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Toem is at the start of your journey. Your grandma sends you out to photograph the mysterious phenomenon Toem, and she does not explain to you what Toem is. You are just supposed to find it, and figuring out what Toem is and photographing it is sort of like the big climax of the game. But it's pretty good. Nice. It did not the Toem did not disappoint when I reached it.
I've always wanted to play it, and it's just like. We need more time in the day.
It's really short. It's like it's like beautifully short. It's
okay.
I don't remember how long the original game was. It was definitely under 10 hours.
Let me add it to my backlog on IGN playlist.
It's almost certainly on sale because there's like a huge Cyber Week sale going on right now. Everywhere.
And the DLC is free.
And the DLC is free. That is awesome. Yeah. Toem. I am probably going to check this one out. Kat, have you been up to anything interesting and exciting and new that you would like to share?
Two things. The first one is Nintendo, and the second one is Nintendo. The Nintendo one is the Steam Autumn Sale happened, and it was easily the most excited I've ever been for a Steam sale because I have the Steam Deck.
Steam Deck, yeah.
And I was kind of sitting there. I ended up getting like Sekiro, some things like that. But Ace Combat 7. I was on great the game. Fence about whether to get Tales of Arise, a game that I already Ooh. Have. I'm intrigued by the concept of being able to play that game on the go.
Have you finished it?
It's quite beautiful. No, I never finished it. I got to like the end of the first major chapter. Oh, I beat the first major boss and got like one of the new characters. And I was like, okay, interesting. That's why I was like considering getting it so that I could add it to my giant pile. But the big one was The Witcher, which I was kind of going, I really want to play the next gen update on PC, but there's no cross save. Weirdly, there was only cross save between the Switch and the PC, but they've added cross save for all of them. So I can finally rescue my save from the Xbox and put it on PC, and I can play it on Steam Deck.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Very nice. I'm totally going to play through Witcher. Actually, I'm not going to play through Witcher again. I'm going to use my save and then play Blood and Wine, which I have never played.
I've never played that one. Yep. I've been waiting for this moment to finally play through the Blood and Wine expansion.
Lots of smart people say it's one of the best expansion of all time.
So. I absolutely loved the base game, and the Hearts of Stone expansion was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the best RPG side quests I've ever played. So I'm very excited to play through Blood and Wine, finally. And then the more Nintendo thing was I got turned on to Hyperlight Drifter over the holiday. I never really played it. I didn't actually know that much about it. But they were like, you should play Hyperlight Drifter. Get a good pair of headphones.
Yeah.
And just like sit down and vibe and play it. And they were right, because that is the kind of game you play with headphones. Mm-hmm, the ambient sound, cool. The music.
It's good.
Low rumbles. I really like it.
Yeah.
And... yeah, if you never played Hyper Light Drifter, it's a top-down kind of action RPG-ish experience. There's a little bit of a Link to the Past vibe, but it focuses a lot more on the individual movements, the dashing around and everything. Lots of exploration between, so far, four major zones, kind of a north, south, east, west. And you can kind of go wherever you want at
any time.
Beautiful
to look at, too.
Beautiful to look, absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. I like this a lot.
This game is vibes, and I beat the first boss in the West, Big Toad guy, and I'm having a great time with it. So I'm gonna like sit down and actually like properly finish this one. Oh, and I love the blaster. Actually, this reminds me. This is more Star Wars than Andor. I think it's great. This is what I want out of Star Wars. The wandering samurai, the Ronin, in space with the blaster and the laser sword and everything. They have a little robot buddy that will spot things. They're going through mysterious ruins. Like, they're dudes who look like stormtroopers who are shooting right there. Yeah, it's cool. Very Star Wars-y, and I appreciate
it. Really cool.
It's so good.
It's Hyper Light Drifter, a game that's, at this point, like, 6 years old.
Holds up great, though.
Holds up great.
Yeah.
Totally play it on the Nintendo Switch. That's one of the beautiful things is if it came out, if it's an indie game that came out at a certain point within the past 10 years, probably on Switch at this point.
Yep.
So.
And it's probably very good, and it's probably on sale. Mm-hmm. Eric, you've been playing a game about soccer?
Yeah. I'm playing Soccer Story. I have it on my screen here. If I finished, since I've been on last, I finished Mario Plus Rabbids. 9 out of 10 for me. Really liked it. I think it's just fantastic.
I'm stuck on a level with a bugged pipe right now. I really want to
finish
it. Yeah.
Weird.
I can do it without the bugged pipe, but it's making it so the enemies can come through the pipe, but I can't without freezing the whole level.
Oh, weird.
And it's a story mission, so I have to finish it.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I'll get there.
I played Atari 50, which is a wonderful collection.
Very good.
Some Vector Spectre is just such a cool little vector, like almost Vectrix-like collection of games. And, there's multiplayer tank stuff, new stuff, Haunted House. But yeah, I've also played a game called Little Gator, which is kind of like a short hike. It's like animals pretending to be in a fantasy adventure. And it's almost like The Legend of Zelda, but it's like it's all they're pretending. So it's like the sword is a stick. And then find out that somebody took the actual sword, which was a wooden sword. And, you know, it's one of the other kids like, oh, you want this thing? Aww. It's very cute.
Look
at that.
Not as zoomed out as a short hike. It's more kind of like, think like Ocarina of Time-ish smaller version of it. It's very, very fun. Soccer story. Did you check the scores, by the way? Are we still...
Japan is leading 2-1.
What? How did that happen?
They scored two goals.
Two goals. That's how it happens.
Oh, my God. Well, Germany, you better score some more because we're not going to go through on that goal differential, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, that sucks. but I've been playing Soccer Story, which is a more positive experience. By the way, people talking crap about that game, about it being football and not soccer and all that, you can change it in the settings. There's a setting where everybody will say football if you want to, or everybody will say soccer if you want to. So no more fighting. There's even guys there with an S and an F sign, soccer, football, and they're fighting over it too. It's silly.
That's a game by any other name. I love that.
Still the same game. First of all, it is not from the makers of Golf Story.
Right.
And I like that kind of, it irks me a little bit that it is somebody trying to capitalize on name recognition of a game that I think a lot of people like, me included. But it is very fun. It's very competently made. It is you said it right, it's a chore game. Like somebody tells you, oh, find these 5 goals and shoot, you know, like shoot the ball into these 5 goals, and then you come back and you get a new power. It's set in a dystopian future where only one corporation can have soccer matches and they control everything, and like you've got this underground group of rebels who are trying to reclaim soccer for themselves.
It's the plot of Footloose.
And then as you play it, you unlock more and more controls, and it almost feels like a classic 16-bit soccer game when that happens. And but it is, you know, you explore an overworld, you find targets. At first you can only shoot at the targets at the bottom, then you learn the ability to shoot high and actually direct your shot, then you can find all the targets that are higher up and all the hidden stuff. It's cute. I'm really liking it. I think I'm going to stick with it.
Aww.
I'm playing Pokemon too. Have you heard of that one?
Nope.
Little indie game.
Yep.
A little too esoteric for my taste.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I went ahead and I prepared a little something.
Okay.
Ooh.
For my segment.
Okay.
For the Miiverse. excuse me. Let me crack my knuckles here. I don't know why I had to crack my knuckles, but it's almost the end of the year. We did it. Everybody, great work. I'm so proud of us all. But with the end of the year comes discussions around Game of the Year. We're having them here now, as a matter of fact, not like literally now, but you know what I mean. The Game Awards are next week, which is, of course, the major event where everyone puts on suits and gowns so they can watch YouTube trailers for next year's biggest games. But Game Awards are also ostensibly about awards games. And this year, Jeff Keighley is sticking to the literal interpretation of the name of his show. Once again, one game will be crowned Game of the Year while all the others get forgotten about forever. Well, I am here to say the Game Awards nominees this year are a sham. God of Boar.
Wow.
The Game Award nominees are, for the Game of the Year, Plague Tale Requiem, Elden Ring, God of War, Ragnarok, Stray for some reason, and Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which, guys, it's not going to win. I'm sorry, all the Xenoblade Chronicles fans. But you know what game isn't on the list? In fact, it's not nominated for any awards at all at this year's Keighley's, and it's the true Game of the Year.
Okay.
Immortality.
By which I, of course, mean...
Tunic.
Sonic Frontiers. Yes, friends. Sonic Frontiers has blast processed its way into my heart. It is an absolute bonkers experiment that doesn't always work right, but it never works wrong. Please just pretend that makes sense. I love this game more than I ever expected I would love any Sonic game. And once I turned Super Saiyan and battled a legendary beast while a pop metal song went just so damn hard, I was in love. By the way, spoilers for the first boss fight there. Go search for the Sonic Frontiers OST Undefeatable Giganto on YouTube. Try not to get pumped. I defy you. You can't do it. Okay. Here are the facts. Hedgehogs are mammals. Hedgehogs fight all the time. The purpose of hedgehogs is to flip out and gather chaos emeralds. Well, guess what, folks? Sonic does all of those things.
Wow.
This is the ultimate pump-up game. It is a pure distillation of fun packaged into a game that I would quit my job over if it came down to it. Not really, Pear. Don't worry. This is so fun. It is so reckless in its design. Everything barely holds together. It's duct tape and baling wire all the way down. And the entire time I'm playing it, I have the biggest smile on my face. Look, I'm a simple man. When I play a game, I don't need some guy from West Wing there. In fact, I think that makes it worse. What I do need is an insanely fun adventure where nothing quite makes sense story-wise, and you have to go fishing for some reason. Sonic Frontiers is that game, and Sonic Frontiers is my game of the year. Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
We clearly need a new award show called the Macy's.
Yeah.
I mean, look, nobody's been calling. My phone is right here. If you got my number, give me a ring. We'll make up some statues.
Reckless in its design. We're putting that on the box.
Reckless in its design. Yeah. You know, Sonic can run faster than the world can load.
I mean, it's just that segment we did earlier, right? Like, really fun. I don't know if it runs like ass, but really fun has something about it that is like ass.
Well, it doesn't run. I mean, it runs significantly slower on Switch, but it doesn't run poorly. It's just that, you know, the world is not the most gorgeous on the bigger consoles, and you know, I'm not far enough in it to feel the same thing Seth is feeling. What platform are you playing on?
I am playing on a Nintendo platform.
Oh, okay, there you go.
The FPS performance mode.
Ah.
It doesn't. I loved this game from like the second I started up, and I'm not a Sonic guy.
Okay.
I am not at all. I mean, yeah, I have Sonic plushies around, but like, who doesn't in this day and age? Come on.
You have one on camera with you. Like on when it goes to the big camera of you, there's a Sonic plushie right there next to you. I saw it earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like,
I look at that and I thought, that's a man that loves Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, that's...
No, I just appreciate Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
The Sonic appreciator is long gone.
Yeah, no, like, I love it. It's just a fun game. It's pure just game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. You literally go Super Saiyan when you become Super Sonic. The pump-up music is amazing. The soundtrack, at the very least, this should have gotten a nomination for soundtrack of the year because it is absolutely just an incredible soundtrack. And my game of the year.
It's kind of wild, like, what a soundtrack can do to elevate something that is like good or mediocre to like excellent, right?
Just look at Star Wars.
Yeah, Pokemon Scarlet Violet has this problem. Like sometimes the game is not, you know, amazing, and then one of those Toby Fox beats comes in, and I'm like, nice time here.
Uh-huh.
Solid soundtrack. I agree.
That's really good.
Yeah. Well, I might put God of Boar, was it? On pause for a few hours to play a little bit more Sonic to see if the Macy's are right.
Enough. I'm convinced. I'm quitting my job and becoming a Sonic Frontiers influencer.
Yeah, there you go.
Is Sonic Appreciator a job I can get paid for?
Mm-hmm. I'm putting that on my business
cards. I'll hire you.
Going forward.
Oh, thanks.
Hell yeah.
You can join my burgeoning empire.
You're great.
I love it, Seth.
If you want to talk about it in the comments, I will read the comments on YouTube. Or if you want to do it on the Facebook group, I will talk to you about Sonic Frontiers. I'm very excited. I have some time off, and I'm just going to play Sonic Frontiers. Family be damned.
I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. Let's talk question block. We've got some questions. Chris Baker, and look, I cheated on this one. I picked this one because I happen to have within arm's reach, surprise, the answer to this question.
Oh, boy.
What is your favorite video game related holiday gift you received that wasn't an actual video game or console. Right here in my pocket, I have it. My wife got me this. This is from the D23 Disneyland Pin Collectors. Oh, come on. Pin Collector.
there it is.
Pin Collector Limited Edition DuckTales. Oh, forget it. It's a Disney pin. It's DuckTales. I love DuckTales. I love Disney stuff, even though I'm not really into Disney that much. I just love their stuff. And I love the Nintendo game. So my wife got me this pin one year for Christmas, and I definitely didn't expect it because I was like, oh, that's a little bit too weird and obscure. And this baby got a little bit of value for just an enamel pin. So that is my favorite video game gift that I've ever been given that wasn't a video game. Thanks, hon. Mwah. She's upstairs working. I'll give her a kiss later. Anyway, anyone else have any video game gifts that they got?
I always buy my own stuff. Like, nobody in my family knows video games better, and they all obviously know that I have a lot of games and consoles and all of that. And so I don't think I've ever gotten anything from anyone, but I did for a work anniversary. People who work here gave me a reimagined Master Sword and Link's Shield as if Zelda had been the hero. So I have that.
Oh, how cool.
Wow. That's cool.
That's actually cool.
It's hanging on the wall upstairs. If you've ever wondered.
Oh, is that what's in the,
if you've ever wondered why it looks different, that's the Zelda alternate timeline Master Sword and Shield.
Oh, that rules. Yeah, yep. I use that room all the time for meetings.
It's very cool, right?
Yeah, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Take a picture later.
Wow.
As a policy, don't keep video game swag, but when I went to the Witcher 3 Blood and Wine event, they had a bottle of Blood and Wine.
Oh my.
They had the Geralt wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't drink it.
And a really nice little box with like to keep like wine stuff with the Witcher like.
Wow.
Thing. Fancy.
It was actually really cool.
Yeah.
I ended up giving away the box.
What was in it? Was it
wine?
What was the liquid? Was it True Blood?
No, it was just straight up red wine. Very okay. good. Cameron, like a cab or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I All also, right. When Mario 64 came out, my parents did not give me an N64. They did, however, give me a Mario and Bowser Beanie Baby, which were all the rage.
And now you're a millionaire because you just sold it on eBay.
I've still got the Bowser, the Bowser Beanie sitting right next to my Nintendo Switch to this day.
Very nice.
That is adorable. Reb, what about you?
Many years ago, 5-6 years ago, something like that, I received the World of Warcraft cookbook from a family member as a Christmas gift because they knew that I was starting to try to cook more often. I did not grow up in a household that did a lot of home cooking. I didn't have a lot of experience with it, and so I was trying to teach myself to cook. They knew I liked World of Warcraft, so they gave me this cookbook. Oh my God. And I took to it like immediately. Literally the next day I cooked the slow roasted turkey. I used that recipe for a Christmas turkey.
Wow, you went
turkey.
Big then.
Yeah, I did. Like I immediately dove into it. So I did that.
I'll
and then
just do the one of the hardest ones.
I just started looking at the table of contents over the next few weeks and cooking more and more. And then I looked at it and counted all the recipes, realized there were 100 recipes and I'd already done over 10 of them in just the space of a couple of weeks. And I thought I could do all of these. And so over the next year I cooked every recipe in the World of Warcraft cookbook. And then I realized, wait, this is a hobby now. So I bought the Mother's Cookbook, which is Earthbound Mother, the Mother Trilogy, basically, and has recipes from that. And I cooked through the entire Mother's Cookbook. I did Elder Scrolls before that. Sorry, I did the Elder Scrolls Cookbook before Mother's. So I did three cookbooks all the way through. I am now about 3/4 of the way through the Legends Cookbook, which is Legend of Zelda. And my next project is going to be the brand new Pokemon cookbook by Victoria Rosenthal that just came out. My partner got me that a few weeks ago as a gift.
Whenever you're cooking the Zelda food, do you just go brum, 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 brum?
I wish I could. I feel that energy sometimes with some of these recipes. But yeah, a lot of them, I mean, like most of the book, yes, there's some things like there's the weird pumpkin soup that Yeto makes in Twilight Princess. Yep. Like there's some recipes.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
It's actually really
Give
good.
Give me the recipe for that.
Okay.
That was so creepy, that scene. I thought there was something wrong.
I loved that.
That's good.
That's all. I did not
my
know.
My favorite
this is
one, top five moment for
you,
me.
You think that a fish pumpkin soup doesn't work, but somehow
it
does.
That sounds good.
But it's mostly Breath of the Wild, and so there's a lot of... I have an ongoing Twitter thread where I post photos of the recipes. I'm not like a genius chef. I don't do
you
beautiful
make
food photography, but it's fun, and it's
really
mostly
good.
Edible.
Do you keep the bones so you can make a Broth of the Wild?
That was good.
No.
Thank you.
I am, however, this weekend doing one of my more recent dreams that has sort of evolved from this making video food thing. I've invited a group of friends over for the There and Snack Again challenge. We are going to watch the entire Lord of the Rings extended trilogy, and anytime a character on screen eats food, we also have to eat that food.
Oh, wow.
So you made Lembas.
I'm going to. I haven't made it yet because it's not
No way, really?
But what about the scene where meat's back on the menu, boys?
Meat's back on the menu, boys. It's also, we're doing a vegetarian, we're doing a pescatarian version of the challenge, too. So it's not actually meat, but
all right,
it'll be faithful to the spirit of the scene.
That's amazing.
I will be at this event, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm so excited. Oh,
Reb, if I sent you a couple recipes out of, and you're going to think I'm joking, but if I sent you a couple recipes from my Mountain Dew barbecue cookbook, you think you could
No, that's hilarious. I would totally do it. I absolutely have a weird Mountain Dew loving gamer
side.
Well,
yeah, you're from Kansas City, so you have like barbecue or you're right. You're from Kansas City. So.
Yeah.
So
I know
all barbecue
when I see it. I've been at a party that had a cake with Mountain Dew icing on it. It was delicious.
Actually sounds kind of good.
My kind of party.
It was great. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Oh, man. Yeah, I got that book. Crab Kala. I got that book right at literally the day I decided I was going to lose 20 pounds. And I got this book of Mountain Dew barbecue. And it's like, 8,000 calories per rib.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
No.
There it is. The Mountain Dew cookbook. It's so good.
Wow.
Like, amazing
recipes. All right, bless you, Ren.
Enough talking about delicious Mountain Dew, because I'm afraid we've come to the end of our show, our journey. I'm so glad to be back, to be with you all again, both the panel and, of course, the audience. But that is it. That is all the time we have left for this week's NVC. Before we go, a couple favors to ask. So if you're watching us on YouTube, please, you got to leave us a like. You got to leave a nice comment. You could even subscribe if you wanted to. Go above and beyond. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, leave us a nice review or just any review. I mean, I would like a nice one better. Please. It helps spread the good NVC word, and we will be forever in your debt. I wanted to mention IGN Plus. Members can grab game keys for 3 games right now. Onsen Master, Blood Rain Terminal Cut, Tiny Troopers Global Ops. Go to IGN.com. I blew it. Whatever. IGN Plus, it's our subscription service. It's really cool. You should be checking it out. I want to thank the panel. I want to thank Red on the ones and twos, but most of all, I want to thank all of you for hanging out with us as we went on this incredible journey together. Remember, NVC, only place where you can
get the thing.
Get the thing.
Go Samurai Blue.
Germany did not.
Oh.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.